It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT, and I'm joined by Sean Waterman, Washington Times national security reporter. Hello, Sean. How are you?
Hello, Andy. I'm good.
Boston bombing investigation reveals intelligence failures. No. Really? Well, what have we learned about the bombers? Let's begin there.
Okay. So we know that they are two brothers, ethnic Chechens, who were raised in the Caucasus, this rather volatile, majority Muslim part of southwestern Russia. We know that the elder brother, Tamerlane, goes back in for 6 months last year, the first 6 months of last year. And we know that he comes back, and soon after that, they seem to begin, or within a few months anyway, they seem to begin planning this attack. So we also know, however, that in 2011, the year before that, the Russians had sent a note to the FBI saying that they believed this guy might be an extremist and mixed up in bad things. So the FBI did what we're told is a pretty thorough investigation. They interviewed him, they interviewed his relatives. They looked for signs that he'd been visiting radical websites or, been in electronic communication with any extremist groups. They didn't find any information, any derogatory information, as they call it.
Mm-hmm. Now, did the FBI admit to multiple contacts with the Russians over this guy?
Well, I've been talking to federal officials today, Andy, and they're pushing back a little bit. I mean, that one of the senators that they briefed yesterday afternoon did say, I believe it was Richard Burr, did say that there'd been multiple contacts.
Okay.
But when I talked to federal officials today, the word is that if by multiple contacts you mean that they sent us the same information a couple of times when we'd asked them for more information, then there were multiple contacts. So, it may be that the Russians simply kept on asking the same question or providing the same answer, I should say, to the FBI when they came back to them. And in October 2011, the FBI closed out their investigation. Now, while he was under investigation, Mr. Tsarnaev was put into the Terrorism Identities Datamart environment, which is this huge database of known and suspected terrorists that the U.S. government maintains at the multi-agency National Counterterrorism Center here in Virginia. So he's put into that. There is a flag put on him so that if he leaves or re-enters the country, the FBI agent who's conducting the investigation will get a note telling him so.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time he leaves, which is in January of 2012, the FBI have already closed their investigation. So they don't do anything as a result of him, pinging up.
Okay.
That little flag is set to expire after a year.
Ah.
Because, one of the problems that the NCTC had with this terrorism database is that there were so many names in it, that people we're all familiar with the problems there were with the no-fly list, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there were similar problems with the customs lists, although most, for most Americans, that's not an issue.
Okay. All right. The name Misha. Is it Misha? Misha? What? Who is he?
Well, this is a guy who has been described to the Associated Press by relatives of the Tsarnaev brothers as someone who became very influential over Tamerlane during his recent trip back to the Caucasus, to Dagestan, which is just next to Chechnya. And he is a guy who apparently appears to have inculcated Tamerlane with some rather extremist Islamic ideas. But, I mean, extremist to some might be pious to others,
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy in retrospect, I think, to say, oh, this was a warning sign. But even for professionals and certainly for his family, I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Mm-hmm. Is there an indication that the younger brother, the survivor, Jokhar, was simply carrying out the wishes of his big brother, willful participant?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And certainly The federal officials that I've been speaking to today and the senators last night, everyone seems to have the view that the elder brother was the dominant player.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, one has to remember that much of the information that we're going to end up relying on for that...
is going to be him.
It's going to be his brother. It's going to be his little brother. So, you know, and clearly... if he gets a defense lawyer at any stage, I suspect that that is going to be something that, his defense would want to make much of in court. So, you know, I think you've got to be very careful when you measure these things. One of these guys is dead, and so you're only going to get one side of the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, trust me, he'll get no sympathy from me. All right. Some lawmakers have worried about the sharing of information between our government agencies. Many thought that that would have been fixed after 9/11. I guess that's not the case?
Well, I mean, here's the problem. It's not so much information sharing as information analysis. There's a huge amount of data out there. And, you know, the system is designed to allow relevant information to pass, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not designed to just allow everything, because then everything is a flood, you know? And there is a question, I think, about whether... the FBI might have felt, you know, they should do anything as a result of learning that he had returned to the country after 6 months away, you know, and that he'd flown to Russia, I believe. Moscow was the first destination. So, really, what is that? And this is a guy, don't forget, who's already been investigated and cleared.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, you can say, as I believe Lindsey Graham did over the weekend, that, you know, because you're named by a foreign intelligence service, you know, you ought to have a red flag put up, and that ought not to be taken off. Well, I'd be a bit concerned, personally, at the idea that an American citizen, or in this case a green card holder, legal permanent resident, could be, you know, flagged on the basis of any kind of tip from foreign intelligence services, especially when so many of them are kind of deeply anti-democratic and corrupt, like the ones in Russia.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to move you on to a couple other things that I want to touch on very quickly before I let you go. And one is a story I saw you post a little while ago regarding hackers find flaws in IT security on a new Navy vessel. What is this about?
Well, this is the Navy's $440 million each littoral combat ship, which is littoral waters, are those waters close to the shore. And the LCS is a new class of naval vessel, basically designed to be a sort of close assault ship and to carry out military operations in these littoral waters. Now, what happened is that at some point, we're not quite sure when, but anyway, this year, it seems, a group of what they call a red team, which is, you know, a red team is any group of U.S. personnel that represent the enemy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what these guys were, they were penetration testers. They were, we call them white hat hackers, okay? They're hackers who work for the good guys, for the U.S. military in this case, for the Pentagon's weapons testing office, and they managed to hack in. We don't know exactly how or to what effect, to the IT systems, which, of course, you know, I mean, everything on these new ships is run by computers.
Yeah.
And while we don't know the extent of the penetration or what the hackers were able to do, it's obviously a very worrying phenomenon. And but the Pentagon has told the Navy to get it sorted out.
Yeah. And I understand that the Chinese and the U.S. have been discussing cybersecurity recently.
Well, there were earlier this week in Beijing, General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had a meeting with his some of his Chinese counterparts there, his first ever trip to Beijing, and the highest military-level meeting between the two countries for a couple of years. And cyber security was certainly on the agenda. His General Fang, the Chinese counterpart, said at the press event afterwards that, you know, they had to do something about cybersecurity because he said the effects of a major cyber attack could be as bad as those of a nuclear weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's quite interesting to hear the Chinese say that, because, of course, we always think of them as the aggressor in these matters. But Stuart Baker, who's a former Homeland Security and National Security Agency official, is fond of quoting what he calls Baker's Law, which is, our cybersecurity sucks, but so does theirs. And, you know, actually, China's probably sucks a lot worse than ours does. And I know this because, you know, I've talked to people who track these things, and their critical infrastructure, you know, with the stuff that runs their dams and their power grid, is just as leaky and easy to break into and attack as ours is.
Yeah.
General Fang said they had to do something about this, but he said it would be very difficult, very challenging, that it would take a long time to develop a mechanism between the two countries. But at least it seems, you know, we have got that agreement that there ought to be some kind of... with the Russians, they have a cyber hotline now, so that if there is this kind of, you know, major, extremely damaging and disastrous sort of cyber attack, the two heads of state can confer about, you know, in real time about what's going on and who might be behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a sort of adjunct to the nuclear hotline, which they still have between Washington and Moscow.
All right, my friend, I think we've come to the end of our time limit here, but I appreciate you joining me today and discussing a couple of these stories, and we no doubt will be talking again very shortly. Thanks, Sean.
I look forward to it, Andy. Cheers.
Sean Waterman, National Security and Cybersecurity Reporter here at the Washington Times. It is 5:42, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.